This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 445, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Guess it's true, I'm not good, I don't understand. But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave, will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all I need.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 445. I am the Reverend Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everybody.
You scared us for a second there.
We are iFanboy.
This has been a difficult show to bring to you this week. I just want everyone to know
we're
that.
We're trying. We're going
to
push through. We are iFanboy. We like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book that they read. We call that the Pick of the Week. Talk about it on this here podcast, along with other books of the week, topics of interest, things we love. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder / warning, this is a review show, and so we will be giving away all the important things that happen that you don't want to hear about if you haven't read them yet. So turn it off, come back when you're ready, and we'll have a big old luau of comics commentary goodness. This week, Connor had a whole bunch of sunshine and daisies to talk about. This is a really pleasant book, yeah.
Paul, your little intro there was way too peppy for my taste, considering how sad we are collectively as a nation and really a world that Life with Archie, number 36, the Pick of the Week, brought us the death of Archie Andrews, All That Is Good About America, Apple Pie, the 50s. It's all gone.
It's all about crying over a spilt chocolate milkshake.
We finally did it.
They've been saying that this was going to happen, the people on the news.
and exactly how, too.
Well, if that's what you do in modern comics these days, right, is you take your big plot point and you plaster it all over the mainstream news. You don't tell them that this is an alternate reality storyline in which this character is dying, because that's very confusing. So you just tell them Archie's dying and everyone on the news freaks out because you're – especially certain news agencies of certain political bands freaks out because they think you're killing Archie Andrews, when in reality it's just the – alternate future story, Life with Archie.
But even within the comic itself, they're treating it with a lot of, you know, gravitas. Like at the end, there's like this, you know, in memorial for Archie Andrews and what he means. And, you know, starting up by saying, you know, it's hard to believe that there was a time when there wasn't an Archie Andrews, you know, in comics or, you know.
Which is very true. Zeitgeist. But let's start from the beginning. Yeah. First of all, a bunch of really great covers on this issue.
Oh, yeah.
Variant covers. Francisco Francavilla did a really great Moody gravesite cover. I liked the Adam Hughes cover of all the characters staring at the Coke bottle at Pops. And then there was the
Fiona
great,
Staples, Mike Fiona Allred, Staples. And Laura Allred. And then I got the Ramon Perez one.
Great cover.
Which is like a Life magazine treatment.
Really? I mean, they've been getting really strong cover artists on these, and I like the Francavilla tie-in to Afterlife with Archie. I thought that was a nice touch. But if you may or may not know, and we used to talk about this book quite often before Afterlife with Archie took over our hearts and minds. We used to, at least I would read Life, check in with Life with Archie. I didn't read all the issues and tell you about what was going on in the alternate futures where in Walking Up Memory Lane, Archie saw his future with Betty and his future with Veronica. And this, what this series did was it went forward. It went past the eternal bubble that Archie and Betty and Veronica live in and took them into their adult lives. And in one storyline, he was with Betty, and one storyline, he was with Veronica. That way they could have their cake and eat it too, even though everyone knows he should be with Betty. And
so each issue, you'd pick it up, and one half of it would be the, you know, universe with Veronica and then the universe where he married Betty.
And it was funny because this issue opens, it's very much presented as something people are going to pick up who've never read the series. So there's a very funny sort of convoluted timeline that opens the issue up. And it's crazy.
And it's long, too. It's not just one page.
No, and it's like a graph. It's like the kind of thing you'd see on a crazy serial killer's wall. There's lines connecting boxes, and you have to follow along everything. And it tells you the story of what has happened to Archie since he left Riverdale to become an adult.
It's like Rip Hunter's Guide to Riverdale.
Right.
This crazy flowchart, yeah.
And then it ends with a picture of Archie dead. So that's nice in the first couple of pages.
The staying power of that image from Rip Hunter, it was from 52, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's an amazing bit of comic book work that we're still talking about it. Carry on.
So I assume you guys both read this issue?
Yep,
so I did.
Such a big deal.
I heard about it on NPR that morning. And the first thing I thought was, way to go, Alex. And then Alex, who works at Archie.
Alex Segura,
sorry. Who we know from DC Comics this story was everywhere.
Yeah,
it was really interesting. And actually, I thought the NPR people did a good job because they actually went the extra mile to explain that there's still the regular Archie. This is just a story, and I was like, oh, bless your hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, this was sort of a mercy killing for.
And
Seth's.
Then they asked me to pledge money, which was a bit much.
This was a mercy killing for Sad Sack Adult Archie, who. In both of his lives in both timelines, was really not too happy with the way things.
Really,
at least in the
he was thrilled in this.
Well, I think things have turned around, which makes it all the more tragic. But
I
read the first couple, and then I came back in the middle. I was reading this timeline, and I realized, oh, I didn't read any of that. Oh, I read that. In the life with Betty, he was unhappy. They never saw each other anymore because they were both so busy. And according to this timeline, Archie maybe almost had an affair. And then in the Veronica storyline, he was sort of an unhappy middle manager in her father's company, and it wasn't nothing was really going all that well for Archie or for Reggie or for anyone. Cheryl Blossom had real cancer. I mean, it was rough. But I thought this was obviously I thought this was a great issue, but I thought it was a really great overview of Archie of the sort of importance of the character in the historical comic book timeline. And it gave you a really nice look at his life from, you know, way back as a kid when he's trying to get the attention of Betty Veronica to high school age to as an adult. And I also thought it was really nice was that this issue caps off both timelines. So we don't know, and it's never revealed which girl he's with in this issue. It's sort of implied he could be with either.
I thought that was really cool.
It was a really nice way to handle sort of all the timelines coming together at this point because the whole story is that Kevin Keller, the gay character that Archie introduced a while back, is running for Senate, or he's a senator now.
He's a senator, yeah.
And he's had death threats, and there was apparently a shooting at a mall that targeted gay people. And
why didn't you listen to Ron Butterfield? Don't right. go to the thing.
So in this issue, the whole thing is they're having a fundraiser for this.
It was just for me.
Oh, yeah. Did I not watch fucking West Wing?
I know, but
how did I get
I've got another thing for Josh coming up.
Before anybody. Anyway, they have a fundraiser. There's going to be but there's a threat against his life. So when they show up at the fundraiser at Pops, which is now run by Jughead, there's a shooting, and Archie takes a bullet for the senator and dies. And I thought it was a really great issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was really long, and give you a lot of meat to hold on to. And I thought. The final image of the chocolate shake or the malted that he got with the three straws, like he always got for Betty, Veronica, and him, that was spilled, was a really sort of powerful one. That was good.
I like that you brought up the sad sack Archie thing, and the way it sort of describe him for anyone who hasn't been reading this particular thread of Archie books is that, like, he looks like Morris from ER.
Right.
You know, but he has the karmic misfortune of Dr. Green from ER.
Right.
Like, and it's sort of the way they frame the ending, it's, you know, it's kind of like Dr. Green's ending a bit, like, you know, surrounded by all his loved ones and thinking about his past and everything. And there's a great sort of, you know, nostalgia trip in here where we see young Archie, who is never not creepy looking. I'm sorry. But, like, he's just like, it's like adult Archie head with just like a kid body. And but I love the I mentioned the spilt chocolate milkshake, the last image. I mean, you see, you know, what could be the last page is, you know, it's Betty cradling Archie's body and Veronica looking on, I think. And then you flip the page, yep. And it's a knocked over, you know, milkshake. Because it's the perfect place to do it is, you know, in the malt shop. And right. And it's just that classic image. And it just made me laugh. And it also bookends. It ties in the beginning where Archie is, you know, antagonizing these two girls because, you know, he has a crush on both of them. And he refers to, you know, like her, you know, that it's this one girl that he fell in love with. But since this is the culmination of either timeline, they leave it open. And so whenever he's looking at, you know, the one he loves, they're both in frame. So it could feasibly be either of them, which is a neat trick. It's pretty cool.
Well, what's interesting to me was that it wasn't actually the final issue of the series.
Right.
Next issue 1 year later. And it's like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'll check it out. Another all-star cast of cover artists, Walt Simonson, Cliff Chang, Tom Lee Edwards, Jill Thompson, Alex Ross. The Alex Ross one haunts my dreams. But
God. Like if you woke up from a dream and you found out you were in Riverdale, that's the first thing you'd see.
Right.
Like if they open like the trunk, that's the
Archie's. They've opened the trunk up and they're Archie, Jughead, Betty, Veronica are thrill killers.
Yeah, but I think that I'm excited for the 1 year later. The 1 year later thing is going to be like Riverdale's rendition of The Big Chill. Right. Yeah, everybody reminiscing about Archie and
smoking weed.
Yeah.
Boy, one thing that we can do today is reference really old shit. I think.
It's got a new Criterion edition coming out. It's good. It's all.
But
wait a minute. That's an 80s movie.
Yes.
Paul.
Oh my God.
Paul.
What does the yellow light mean?
Keep going.
As a longtime Archie fan, someone who read a lot of Archie books when I was younger in junior high school and such, I thought this was really nice. It tribute issue and a nice capper to a sort of fantasy. You don't get this story, right? You don't get the ending to a character like this. Because the character has to go on, and you know, it's nice to see it.
Is that I don't have any history with it, although I know what it is because I grew up in America.
Cultural lexicon, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny because I've never read an issue of Archie in my life, but like the names all ring bells, and quite honestly, a little ways in, I'm like, I get it. I know what this is. It's really kind of interesting in that way, I think. And while I don't know, like one of the things I didn't know is like, I don't know who the people are who are supposed to be the bad guys in like Riverdale as a town. Like would Mr. Weatherby, he's a teacher, but I don't know if he's a teacher they hate or one they love.
Well, no, what happened was he's the lovable principal who, you know, he right. did bust them, but he never did it out of malice. He liked them. Then they're
Mr. Spelding.
Even now as adults, now they're all adults. And yeah. You know, and in the Betty timeline, Betty and Archie both work at the school. So now they're peers.
Okay. I thought he was going to be the killer. They sort of played it that way.
No,
they sort of played it that way for a half a second. Like if you don't have any context, there was a little bit of something going on there.
Well, he's fat, and you don't like fat people, so I assume I know why you would assume.
Who was the killer? I mean, like I saw who he was, and
he was the guy who worked at the
right. But is there a story about it? Is there a background to that, or is that just a?
I assume so. I haven't read it.
He's slightly darker than everybody else. By the way.
Listen.
I missed the most recent issue, so I don't know if I think it would be kind of cool if it was just like he just first popped up here.
Jughead clearly has bad hiring practices. I know from one of the random issues I'd read recently that he'd hired a guy he was robbing all the stores in Riverdale, and his sister was dating. But I thought it was nice. I thought it was a really nice issue, and I'm glad that lots of people checked it out because it was a fun thing. I didn't read the essay in the back about Archie because it's been so long reading the issue, but
Yeah.
It's not, you know, Archie has been around since 1941.
Oh, you had a hard time finding time to not read any comics that came out this week? God, I didn't have the pick of the week.
Archie is as old as, you know, older than most characters. He's 41 means only really, you know, the Golden Age characters in Superman, Batman, and Robin, and a couple of the DC characters, Hawkman and such, are older than him. But really, other than that, he's been around longer than everything. And it was a really good issue.
I just love the and it's like, and it's not just like somebody, you know, pops out and shoots Archie and then it's over. It's like there's a long sequence of it's like,
yeah,
it was tense.
It's like the, you know, the In the Shadow of Two Gunmen thing from West Wing, to continue the references. Yep. But like it was like that. There's this scramble and there's this confusion and Archie's looking for, you know, the guy, and like the Ron Butterfield guy is looking for, you know,
all
who
shot
it is.
Point
and,
of view.
Yeah. And and then
shot.
And then, oh no, and what is it, Jughead? What's happened?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it was very cinematic, actually, I thought.
The issue that was almost pick, and actually it was the pick until I read Archie, was Ms. Marvel number 6. And Paul and I have been raving about this book for 6 months now, assuming it's monthly. I don't even know. But starting with the really wonderful cover.
Oh, yeah.
To the rest of the issue, the cover was by Jamie McKelvey and Matthew Wilson, by the way. This was, I thought, the best issue of the series.
I think it was really strong. And like, I opened it up, I was like, oh no, it's a fill-in artist. It's, you know, it's not, you know, Alfana, but it's Jake White. He does a really good job. And as the more I got into it, I was like, I really like this art.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, Alfana is, you know, it's really special and it makes the book look totally different than anything else. But I like this one too. And this is the first big team up for Kamala.
Well, before we get to the team up, let's talk about the villain. The villain of this series so far has been someone named the Inventor. And we only saw them. We didn't know. Did we know we saw them at the end of the last issue? The Birdman?
That was the reveal. Giant cockatoo.
This giant cockatoo. In this issue, it's revealed that the Birdman, their inventor, is actually a clone of Thomas Edison, whose cloning process was accidentally contaminated with cockatoo DNA to make a giant Birdman.
This other scientist who created him had a pet, you know, cockatiel or whatever, and it got into the into the mix.
It very much is the tone of this book. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's a little silly. But it's still pretty serious. And this issue, as Paul said, there's a team up. Wolverine shows up, and so Kamala has her first. What's her name?
Kamala.
Kamala has its first team up with another superhero, and I thought that was really fun. Also, I think we're going to talk about this more in the letters section, but in the section after the comics today. But this was the first time, and Kamala is an Inhuman.
Yes,
she was mutated when the Terrigen Mists were released throughout New York, and this was the first time that being an Inhuman was treated like being a mutant. Why is that important? We'll talk about that later in the episode. But I thought the dynamic between Wolverine and Ms. Marvel was really, really great, really funny. I thought
it was, and it's you know, no healing factor Wolverine. And this is the first. It's the first of two parts. Apparently, I think it's called Healing Factor, or something like that.
She has a healing factor, and he doesn't. And she is going along, assuming he does, and doesn't. He doesn't, and all the things that he's got to deal with because of that.
And it's I thought it was just really cute. I don't know how you pronounce it. That Doge meme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like so this much. You know that like the way she's reacting to Wolverine. She's from the Tumblr generation, and it's been established she writes fan fiction. And that was one of my favorite jokes, is that she wrote this fan fiction for a website called like Totally Awesome or whatever, and it was the number two ranked fan fiction that had him as a character. And he's like, oh really? And then he's like, well, wait a minute, what was number one? And it was a fanfic about Cyclops and Emma Frost. And he's like, oh jeez. And she's, you know, sort of fangirling out about being, you know, hanging out with Wolverine. And it was just the right, you know, amount of that. And, you know, like a very clever team up and using the powers. You know, she can shrink down to small size so that when she's falling from a great height, it's not going to be a huge deal, and he can catch her and all that stuff. And there's, you know, alligators with like laser beams on their heads, and
she's a really likable character.
She really is,
and it feels very authentic, and it has a very indie comic vibe. I mean, the art does a lot towards that, but it doesn't feel like your normal Marvel comic, and it's really good.
And I thought another really important scene in this, she has a conversation. Her dad wants her to, you know, have this meeting with the Sheikh at their mosque, basically, and has a conversation with this guy, and just a normal dude. You know, he's like a wise, you know, older man. And I think that's an important, you know, thing to see. And she's like, are you going to tell me that, you know, I got to stop hanging out with boys and, you know, stuff like that. And he's like, I've been doing this for years. If you haven't figured out that that's my advice anyway, you know, I haven't been doing my job. Just if you're going to, you know, be doing this, just, you know, be a good person. And it's just, I don't know. I just like that moment.
It was good. The issue was really well-rounded, I thought. Really, really strong. Everyone should check out Ms. Marvel. There'll be a trade of it soon since this is the sixth issue. Or there's probably a trade of the first five.
I figured it's only the first five.
So I would recommend everybody check that out if you haven't yet.
But seriously, I'm loving a lot of Marvel books right now. It's I think it's in my like top three. It's really strong.
Now, the comic book industry, as everyone knows, at least on this show, has a long history of self-referential, fourth wall-breaking comics. They're making the people behind the comics characters in those books. And this week, the latest edition of that was Harley Quinn Invades Comic-Con International San Diego, because that's the name they want to go with.
Right.
And it was a special issue featuring the inexplicably popular Harley Quinn. I mean, not that the character isn't popular, but that book remains a top 10 book.
Oh, does it?
Really?
I didn't know. I wasn't paying attention to the numbers. Interesting.
I did not know that.
It's crazy. And there's just no knock on the creative team. Because
overall, think, you know, or at DC?
Overall. And
oh, shit.
It's no knock against the creative team. I there's no secret. I love Paul Miatti Connor.
Yeah.
But didn't expect that. And so they did a special issue in which Harley Quinn goes to Comic-Con. And this was done by an all-star cast of artists. There's a page here by Paul Pope. Amanda
that
Connor.
Was unexpected.
Was like,
Amanda Connor does a lot of art in it. Damian Scott, really interesting artist working on this one. And
who
I guess,
like,
did you guys both read this?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had to because no comics other than I read came out this week, so I had to try to read something.
I thought this could have been a lot funnier.
Yeah.
Because there's it's such a rich field. As Paul, you can imagine, and Josh and I know all too well. Comic-Con, there's so much there to poke at. And there's some good bits in here. There's some good bits.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It was. The thing was, it was really inside, relatively. Like, it featured, like, Bob Harris and Dan DiDio and, like, a Jeff Johns thing. And, like, relatively inside. So I was like, well, if you're going to go inside, then maybe really make it a little more... Like some jokes that are really... very specific, and then some that are more broad and you know, it's hard to tell you how to write something to be funnier, but you know, like it was okay, but I thought it had a lot more, there was a lot more possibility that it could have had, which I find is always the case. Maybe at this point I've just heard too many jokes about Comic-Con. It was better that there was an issue a while back, I don't remember what it was, but it was like a Comic-Con gag thing I read, and it was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was from Image, I don't remember.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Better than that, but there was a lot more promise basically that it didn't fulfill. I suppose it was interesting because I haven't read any of this, and I was like, Harley Quinn's different now because she's working a T-shirt booth, which is interesting.
Well, that was with her landlord from Brooklyn. Currently sells T-shirts at Comic-Con and comics, I guess. But that was who she was driving with her landlord, and I think the landlord's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting was the cover itself featured all those cosplayers in old New 52 or pre-New 52 costumes, which is interesting. But
I thought, like, I don't know, like, it, like, I think the setups were really pretty good. The setups with the limo full of cosplayers dressed like different Harley Quinns was a really good setup. And then they did, like, they went nuts with it. Like, she shot a police officer. That's something.
Yeah.
But I feel like they all sort of stumbled out of the jail and I was just, and I just, and they ran away. And I just felt like you could have taken that and run with it more.
To me, the funny gags were like when she's selling the T-shirt and the people don't want to pay for it. Like, that was the kind of things if you go to the cons a lot.
That was very insider, but good.
And I also liked her in her head during her portfolio review with Jim Lee, psyching herself out.
I thought that was good. I thought the running gag of seeing a celebrity over and over again was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's something, because you do see that all the time and that people freak out. I thought that was, it wasn't funny at first, but it got funnier as it kept going.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like the joke at the end, where it was Paul Dini and Bruce Timm,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, very, very inside. I mean, they're the ones who created her, and I get that, but it just was a weird note to go out on. I don't even want to be that critical about it, because I thought it was pretty good, and it was interesting.
I thought it was a fun showcase for the artist, and I liked the artist more towards the front, like the opening.
I like the art all the way through.
I mean, I liked them all, but I'm saying, like, my favorites were, like, oh, starting off with the great cover, the wraparound cover was really fun, and then you get some Amanda Connor in there, and then I liked this team of Damian Scott and Robert Campanella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did the
Cassie Batgirl.
That was a great series.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes. That was.
I love that.
During the Golden Age of Batman books.
Yep.
So I thought that was fun, and I agree that the joke writing could be a bit tighter, and
it's one of those things where comics can but rarely does do comedy really well, at least mainstream sort of superhero comics. Like, it happens sometimes, and I think that's why we get so excited with a book like The Superior Foes of Spider-Man or something like that, where they're really hitting comedy beats.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like this is a really good place to do it, which maybe is the disappointment.
Yeah, I feel like when you're going to go insider, which I certainly don't mind. I like the occasional, because they don't do it that often. Just go inside. You know, make the industry jokes.
And satirize it.
Yeah.
Make fun of the people. Like, really, like the people who are bugging you at the booth to try to get something. Like, well, basically, I'm advertising for you. That was a great joke.
Yes.
Like, those are real things by morons that happen. And I think take it to them. You know, like. Turn the mirror on yourself, do the thing. I think there's a ton more jokes they could have done, especially when you're talking about creators like these who've spent so much time at conventions.
Right.
Had the right feel. I felt like I was there. Like, I'm like, well, they said it correctly. You know, like, there's not, I assume there's not an artist in comics who can't draw what it feels like to be in that hall.
Right.
So that was kind of cool.
But it was interesting.
That's a mixed review.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
So The Wicked and the Divine, number 2, this book continues to be a whole lot of fun. I mean, the first one, the pick of the week. I think they're doing some really interesting things with the medium in here, like some really interesting storytelling ideas. When our main character is looking up, you know, Nanka on Google on her phone, and you see all the different headlines, like all the different things that would have come up on a Google search, and underneath them, directly on the phone, it says like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, so she's like not fine. Like, so it's like what she would be thinking, but it's expressed directly in the text on the phone. And Jamie McKelvey is one of those artists who can make social media and like app designs work in comic art. Like, even if you look at, we're going to talk about Teen Titans number 1 in a bit. And that cover is it's in Chirper, which is their take on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's that Lauren or SVU thing.
There's a difference between people who actually use these things, which if you're online, you know that McKelvey and Kieran Gillen use them all the time, social media, versus 45 to 50-year-old men who don't quite get it.
And there are even also a lot of younger artists, and when they're tasked with drawing a smartphone, like, that is, no one is using that device. Like, that is.
Do you remember when Joe Casey did the.
Yeah, he had Twitter use, and it was completely backwards of how Twitter's actually used.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just it's authentic with these guys, and you know, it's just.
However,
mm-hmm.
The joke was that she was annoyed that she had to go to page 2 of the Google results, and then later she said that she read it on Wikipedia, and that doesn't make sense,
right?
Because that would have been the third result.
The second.
Sorry, that's very technical, but that's a thing.
I don't know how you thought, Phil, Josh, but I thought I didn't like this issue as much as the first one.
Nope, I was completely confused.
I thought it was very confusing, and the deeper you go into these mythology of the characters, the more confusing it gets.
It's because I think that it hasn't really been explained very clearly to me within the text of the issue. which isn't necessarily a problem. It just means that I don't quite know what's going on. I think a little bit of that has to do with, and I think this is some of the issues that I had with Phonogram a long time ago.
I'm feeling exactly the same way about this.
Is that Phonogram. It concerns a scene that I'm not familiar with. Meaning that like there's this British music scene and there's underground stuff. And I think that if you're part of that or you think it's cool and want to be part of that, then you can play along with it. I was a little confused that I don't quite know what's going on. I will tell you that the best parts, the strongest parts for me, I was really interested when she went to go see Lucifer in the jail. And
it's like a Hannibal Lecter scene. It's cool.
Yeah, but also like it was just clear. I understood the character. I got the flashback to when she was younger and how it started, and I thought that was really good. Mm-hmm. And that was cool. I feel like there needs to be more of that because I don't feel like I understand the people very much.
Yes, I agree.
And I'd say that's the problem.
I'm very disconnected from the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Looks pretty, but I just don't.
I had a little bit of trouble with the meeting with the journalist in the museum. Like I didn't entirely follow all of that. But then going down into the tube system and trying to track down this Morrigan character, and there's apparently this other god that beheaded her. I'm not in the underground music scene or like rave scene or anything like that, so I don't.
That sounds just awful.
So I was like, yeah, I don't really. I was in New York this weekend, and I was underground waiting for us, and I was like, this is really unpleasant. This is very hot down here.
Yeah, there's rats.
I would not want to go to. This is not an ideal music venue for me. I would like to sit down. So even though it's not a scene that's very interesting to me, I thought the way it was told was pretty interesting. I like the captions over the black and seeing her basically descending down into hell.
The art and storytelling is wonderful, I think, in this issue, mm-hmm. particularly.
I think the concept's good. I just think that we need a little more a little more character understanding and a little more, I don't want to say exposition, but.
Kind of.
Yes, but like well done. And I know.
This is a slow burn because this isn't ongoing. This isn't. A limited series, so I think he's taking his time with the world building.
Yeah, which is fine.
For my part, I don't mind being a little bit in the dark on some of it. I'm intrigued by the little morsels that that I'm getting, and I'm excited to. I'm actually eager to find out about more of the stuff. It's so that I think you can look at it two ways. You could say I'm eager to find out more, or I don't understand this. I need more now. I'm excited that there's more things that I need to, learn.
Yeah. But what I think it does is it takes away the impact of what's happening if you don't have context for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the last page is a classic comic book reveal of a villain. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. I can tell symbolically
what it's
supposed
to
mean.
I realize that it's a surprise. It's
that the reason that exists is historically in like superhero comics is that that's when they say it's Doctor Doom and everybody.
No, but I disagree with you there completely. I think that all you need to know is someone's head got cut off, and that's shocking enough in and of itself.
Okay. Yeah,
my problem is the characters. I don't know enough about them to care about their reactions to things.
The point I was getting to though is, if this was creators that I didn't know. I wasn't familiar with their work. I don't know how much I would stick around. I do stick around because I trust both of these creators to deliver something ultimately. But that's the thing that's hang on to it right now.
I think even aside from the track record, for me, just me personally reading this issue, the ideas are sexy enough. The world building is so interesting that I want to know more. And so this was successful for me.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So on the other side of the spectrum, the other teen book came out this week, Teen Titans number one. I did not go down that road.
You didn't go down the road? No. Okay. Well, I was in because it's Pfeiffer writing it. And I'm glad that I checked this out because it's still, it's still the new 52. And that's still always a problem for me. But I think there's a sensibility in here that it reminded me a bunch of the team dynamics of the old 52. of an older Teen Titans team. And I don't mean older like characters. I mean like, you know, going back a ways. And so basically the setup is that Tim Drake is sort of a hacker, and he's basically their, you know, their eye in the sky. He's the, you know, the old Bruce Wayne from Batman Beyond, and the other characters are sort of in the field, including Wonder Girl. And the whole situation in this issue is that there is a school bus filled with, I think they're high school girls. They're from they're on a field trip, and it's been taken over by a group of terrorists, and they want to plow it into Star Labs, and they have all these demands, and they're broadcasting from the bus. And so it's a little bit like Speed, and the various Teen Titans characters like Bunker and Beast Boy and Raven are all trying to, you know, save the kids. And meanwhile, the group within Star Labs, and I don't know if these characters have been established in other books, because I haven't been following that thread within the New 52. But they're basically watching as this happens. And one of them is very interested to just let this play out and see what the Teen Titans do, with the confidence that the Teen Titans are going to stop, you know, anybody from getting hurt. And so we don't need to launch into anything of our own, any kind of operation to, you know, stop this. And it's, you know, it looks bad for PR for us that, you know, Star Labs is under attack, and they're saying that, you know, we're messing with AI and stuff. It's like, let's just watch this play out. I liked the interaction between the characters. Tim Drake, even though they're going with that idea that he's never been, you know, Robin, that he's always been this Red Robin character, kind of, you know, felt like, you know, Tim Drake to me. It at least worked. It fit within, you know, my idea, my concept of the Tim Drake that I loved when I got into comics. He's always been mm-hmm. my Robin. So it worked for me. So I'm interested in checking out issue two. I think Rocafort is a weird choice for this book.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the story of the New 52 in general?
Yeah, yes. I mean, and it's like I don't mind Rocafort art, but it's a little bit like too cool for school, like via the mid 90s, you know.
I think there's a place for it.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think it's bad, and I've seen his art used before on stuff where, like, I was like, "Oh, that's great."
Yeah, I've liked
it. But it doesn't fit on almost anything they've put him on since the relaunch.
Yeah, if you took, you know, a different artist, you know, from before this new regime, you could do a lot for people who are, you know, have that hankering for, you know, old school DC storytelling. Because
like
I think
cartoony kind of, like, yeah. any of the artists, the Damian Scott.
Well, they've announced all those new books, the Batgirl book and the Batman Gotham Academy and all those things that have that kind of style. And I feel like this is the book that fits right into that niche of trying to attract a teenage or younger audience and a more female skewing audience. I think that's a missed opportunity here.
I think the script works here. I like what Pfeiffer's doing, and that's sort of what I latched onto. And I was just like, can I remove myself from this art? And I can. I just like, I think if they had a different artist on it, I think more people might try it out. So I'm gonna stick with it and see how it goes. And I'm actually going to do that. I say that a lot, but I actually am going to do it with this because I want to try out more DC stuff.
I want to believe.
But yeah, a lot of that stuff coming out of the Bat offices in the fall looks really good. And that, I would say, is not just necessarily looking back to something they used to do. It's forward thinking, but in a, you know, in a good way.
Anywho, that is the first part of the books we'll talk about. We have some more. But in the meantime, if you want to support iFanboy, there are lots and lots of ways to do it. You can go to iFanboy.com/Amazon and you can make purchases. Some of the books that we just talked about, for example, Life with Archie, if you want to check out some of that stuff. You want to check out the surely impending Ms. Marvel trade collection, things like that. Or, you know, dog brushes. Because I bought a dog brush recently and I was like, it'll be here before my trip because I have Prime.
You can do like Paul and I did, or I assume Paul did, and pre-order the Batman the Series collection of Blu-ray that just came out. They just put up there for November's release.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that price will come down a little bit.
Just a little.
When it comes out. Which it could.
Does it work like that? If you buy something and the price comes down?
Yeah, the price matching.
I don't pre-order very much. I want my decision to happen at the moment. I'm like, I want it, and then I want it now, because I'll change my mind if I have to wait too long. You could do that, and anything you buy through Amazon in that way gives us a little cut. Doesn't cost you anything extra. It just takes money away from them, which, you know, is preferable to some people.
Does it help, Josh, that I also ordered a potato masher?
All right, that's good. That's good. That works.
It's coming on Saturday. Got some potatoes to mash. They need mashing.
I make mashed potatoes a couple of times a week now, because I'm Irish and my family's Jewish, so we like potatoes, is what I'm saying. If I can just stereotype terribly, but it's true, and I'm really good at it at this point. I mean, I can make mashed potatoes like you. Anyway, you can go to ifanboy.com/registration. And you can contribute even more directly. You can send in any sort of donation you would like, and we will accept them up to – I want to make this clear. We will accept donations up to any monetary amount.
In any currency.
In any currency. So literally, if you've been thinking, this is a bit too much and I don't know if I want to – it's we're 100% behind you.
It's okay. Trust your instincts.
Yeah. Or you can just go with an easy plan of $3 a month, $30 a year. I've been seeing this happens for other podcasts. They say, you know, $1 a show, something like that. You know, that's good.
$3 a month is less than $1 a show.
I know that. That's what I'm trying to say. It's a good way to go. But if you want to do more, that's totally fair. I try to donate to podcasts that I like a lot. And I think it's a really good way to make sure that you can still get, media, but also take part in it and not have them just go away. Not that we're going to do that.
I'm going to start calling them your Irish potato lumps.
Yeah. Well, there's something to that, although it's different than what they thought nutritionally happened even a few years ago, so who knows.
Well, thank you everyone who supported us through those various efforts. We appreciate you wholeheartedly keeping Josh in potatoes.
They're cheap.
I've completely zoned out. What the hell are we talking about?
It's fine. It's honestly fine for you. Hopefully everyone has zoned out as well. But let's return to the newly announced to have been canceled book, Thunderbolts.
To be fair, also it's hot. and I don't have the air conditioning on because I'm trying to record a
Thunderbolts.
Show.
Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts, for God's sakes.
So Charles Soule's last issue was the last one. Mm-hmm. And so this is the introduction of the new creative team, which is, I don't know their first names, Acker and Blacker.
Right.
They do a podcast.
Real. That's
yeah, it
not
is.
Real.
It's Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. Those might be fake names. They do some sort of podcast that people like a lot and is way more popular than this one.
Like Marvel What If kind of.
Yeah, and they've done some other stuff. I think they did a Deadpool annual a little while back. I didn't like it. And I feel like it sucks because this week I'm the guy who's not liking things and I don't want to be that guy. I actually really like the Archie book that we talked about at the front, which is something.
Was that your pick of the week?
I don't. Might as well have been. I don't know. No, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think about what
five books.
I know, and so they made so little impact on me that I don't even know what to tell you. Basically, if you remember where the last issue left off, is that like the omnipotent God character told General Ross, like, you have to do good. Mm-hmm. Right? And then we start off with this, and then it's like none of that ever happened. Where like Ross is kind of being a dick to everybody in it. And he's apparently killed the Punisher. That's what's going on. And yeah, it felt like I missed an issue. And I don't know that maybe I did. I don't know. The most enjoyable parts were Deadpool hanging out with his demon wife as they fought, and he kept making this joke about how he wanted to leave the team, but he didn't want to disappoint Elektra for like no reason at all, which I thought was very funny. But I had unexpectedly, and obviously I like Charles Soule's work a lot, but like I just didn't expect to like the book like I did before, and it's like a big change, so it's really difficult. Kind of like it ended abruptly because he had too many things and he had to work on, you know, the Death of Wolverine or whatever it is. I don't know, it wasn't quite right. I'm thinking about maybe giving him a little time, but I don't really like these characters.
Like two more issues.
Yeah, well there you go. I don't really like these characters all that much together. Right. Like it was just the how well it was being drawn that made it work. Not drawn, but also drawn, but, you know, sort of written. So it was kind of meh. Kind of disappointing. Thrilling Adventure Hour, I believe, is the name of the podcast. There That's just go. Coming to me.
Paul, what more can
I don't
about
know if
bullets?
You guys have heard about this great little gem of a book called Stray Bullets Killers, and issue
it's
5
life-affirming.
This is a standalone.
If I recall
issue.
The last issue, which I feel like we just talked about last week, was life affirming, was it not?
Well, the guy tried to kill himself, but then he didn't, and shot his prosthetic foot instead. David Laffam.
He was my pick of the week, by the way.
There you go. David Laffam has kind of fixation on fake limbs and cadaver graphs, and I don't know, like, just weird things. Anyways, this is the previous issue was the end of that particular little story thread. This one picks up apparently a popular character. I'm still reading through that big omnibus of the 90s stuff, called Amy Racecar, who is a professional killer, stunt woman, and she decides to end her life of crime and killing and go live by the seaside, where she meets a young man who is trying to kill himself because he has no arms or legs and is blind and is rolling himself into the surf in an attempt to drown himself. So she decides this might be fun to watch, but then she realizes, no, this is the start of the new chapter in my life. I don't want it to end. I don't want it to begin with death. So I better go save him. They end up falling in love and becoming this sort of Bonnie and Clyde thing. And there's this big over the top sort of kill spree mentality to this book. And they go to an alien planet and get him new arms and legs and fix his eyes. And it's got this sort of romance kind of. No, they totally do.
What?
It's this very super like tongue in cheek, like two tongues in cheek, like level of just over the topness. It ends with this like shootout with the cops in a hotel. She gets her limbs blown off, and he says, well, you know what, you're gonna keep me, you know, hold me back, so I gotta go. And he like hops on a helicopter and leaves. And
she's in some sort of hallucinogenic coma for this.
I think I was. I'm pretty sure David Laffam was too. But anyways, it's just insane. And if you think you might like this book, you still might not, but you should check it out anyway.
I don't know that I follow your logic.
I don't. I really
don't
know.
If you like this, you may not, but you should get it.
But you should get it anyway. I don't know.
It sounds like you just want to keep reading this.
I could heartily recommend, you know, Miss Marvel and the Archie book to anybody. Mm-hmm. But this book is just my kind of crazy. And I didn't even know it was my kind of crazy until I discovered it.
This is how people get mixed up in drugs.
All right, so really quickly, because we're going
keep me
long.
Off the street, sorry.
Silver Surfer number 4. If you're looking for a very awkward Guardians of the Galaxy shoehorn cameo because the movie's coming out soon, this is your issue. although
Star-Lord?
if you recall, Silver Surfer he had some outer space adventures with Don Greenwood of Cape Cod, and they're returning back to Earth where the Guardians of the Galaxy intercept them, acting very much as border patrol, and they have to check them for fruit and, you know, microbes and things. And
that's a great sentence.
It actually was it was a total shoehorn cameo, but it was actually pretty funny. And what they were really doing was checking him for signs of having been near Galactus, because they don't necessarily trust Silver Surfer. But the issue was actually really fun. This looks like we're building towards a reunion of the Defenders, so you get some Hulk and Doctor Strange in here who are coming to find the Silver Surfer, and all drawn by Mike Allred, so it's wonderful looking, and I'm really enjoying this book despite myself.
I gotta go back and read this, because Mike Allred, Doctor Strange, sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's great. This book's actually really fun.
Can I very quickly just mention that Shadow Hero number 6 came out this week, day and date with the full collection, so you can get that from First Second Press as print.
Also heard, I didn't hear the story, but I heard a story teased about this on NPR, and I was like, all right, way to go, you guys, too.
It's a really good book. They stuck the landing.
Good job, you guys.
Great tale of the Golden Age and the first Chinese superhero, and I think it's some great work, and I think they could potentially do more of this, and more with this character. I would like to see that. At the very least, I would like to see Jean Luen Yang and Sonny Liu work together again. Those are a good team.
I'm looking forward to reading the collection after having read the first couple of issues.
Yeah.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. That's where you can talk about these books, other books, anything else we talked about. We can have a very interesting discussion about whether or not Paul is on drugs. I think there's probably lots of different takes on that question.
Sure, you're a golden god.
But it's open for discussion. We can have that there at ifanboy.com.
When I first took on the gig, there was talk on the internet that I sound like I'm high all the time.
That's true. And now you're not helping that cause, by the way.
You're not, like the answer is no.
Right. No.
Paul is definitely not on drugs.
Okay, so this was a big week for Marvel announcements leading up
to this. This is one two-thirds sober show.
Sam, you're the one drinking on it last time.
Even the time that I drank about, I got like two-thirds through it, and I was like, that's enough.
So Marvel, a lot of announcements this week leading up to San Diego Comic-Con, which is next week if you are living under a rock. So they announced three big changes for three of their big characters.
Oh, under a rock, you said.
And at this
point, I heard the same thing.
You said a rock. I'm sorry.
Under a rock. Not a rock. All right.
Let's plow through.
Sorry.
So the announcements this week were that let's go in descending order of outrage. First was Superior Iron Man number one. There you go. That's going to happen a lot. Superior Iron Man number one, coming out in November, written by Tom Taylor and art by Yildiray Cinar. And in this, the new status quo for Iron Man is that he is moving to San Francisco. He's donning an all-white Apple-esque suit, and he's going to make apps or some shit like that. He's going to – I think this seems to be the Silicon Valley's hot. So we'll make Tony into a Silicon Valley guy. So
he's like he's going to tussle with Daredevil a bit because Daredevil's also in San Francisco,
right.
And they're not going to get along.
Next, we have all-new Captain America number one, also in November by Rick Remender and Stuart Immonen, in which Sam Wilson is the new Captain America. Sam Wilson, of course you know, is Falcon. Falcon was one of the stars of the gigantic film Captain America Winter Soldier. And that's because Steve Rogers, as we know, had his super soldier serum ripped out of him and is now elderly. And the presumption is he is sort of running Sam Wilson as the behind-the-scenes guy, much like we mentioned earlier.
That is what's happening, yeah. He's going to be in
Beyond.
Avengers Tower. And it's the Batman Beyond setup where – he's old man Wayne, and
right.
Hopefully he'll get a Great Dane.
And
I bet at some point somebody breaks in and he has to fight them off, and he wins even though he's old.
Right, probably.
I've never seen that story.
And then finally, I don't know if you guys heard about this or not, but Thor number one was announced. That's coming out in October, written by Jason Aaron, the current Thor writer, art by Russell Dauterman, who's currently drawing Cyclops. That might be a bad sign for Cyclops as a book. Mm. And in that series, Thor becomes unworthy of Mjolnir. And so a new Thor emerges. She's female, male Thor, or I call Hemsworth Thor. He still goes back to using Yarnbjorn, the axe that's caused all the trouble for the
Yarnbjorn.
And we don't know who the female Thor is.
It's a Norse-based yarn seller.
Also, you carry your baby in it while fighting demons.
A baby Yarnbjorn.
Baby Yarnbjorn.
Yarnbjorn had that case with the Supreme Court recently about...
Yeah.
So we don't know.
Paul, stop bringing up current events.
I'm sorry.
We What's funny is that Paul did that before in a version of the show that no one can hear because it was a previous one we lost. The new Thor's identity is a mystery while this is going on. That's part of the story. And so Marvel released a big promo image via Entertainment Weekly that included Falcon, Cap, and Lady Thor, and Iron Man, and as long as Winter Soldier TV version of Deathlok, Scarlet Witch, and Ant-Man, and Doctor Strange, all of whom are about to be in Marvel movies, and Angela, who I think is being positioned as Thor's long-lost sister, which is stupid, and Medusa and Inferno, who are Inhumans. So that seems to be the – you'll notice no X-Men and or Fantastic Four members in that picture.
Let me ask you this now right away. Which of these immediately strikes your mind as being the dumbest?
All of them.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Sam Wilson is Captain America. Other than the fact that it's sort of familiar and that they already replaced Steve Rogers.
Well, that's why it's dumb. Look, I want to preface I have lots of thoughts
running on
lots of parallel tracks about all these things. And I preface by saying I have no doubt these are going to be good stories. Rick Remender is a great writer. Jason Aaron's a great writer. I'm no doubt in my mind that they will be telling great Thor and Captain America stories. However, it just feels like they never know what to do with Captain America other than to take him out of the costume.
And it's been happening for decades.
Right.
I mean, he's as Nomad, U.S. Agent, others.
Oh, there's also going to be
Captain Steve.
There's a new Nomad.
The president.
His adopted son from.
It just feels like they can never just tell a Steve Rogers story. They always have to take him out of the picture. Mm-hmm. And this is nothing against Sam Wilson being Cap. I love Sam Wilson as a character. He's great. And he'll be a great replacement Captain America. But it's like, yeah. I like Steve Rogers.
I get that. And I think that makes sense a lot. But if you have to, if you're going to do that,
sure, if you have
always really like Sam Wilson as a character. So I'm cool with getting stories like that. I'd be down with, I'd buy a Falcon series, you know, with the right folks. So that doesn't bother me so much because at least you can look at, maybe this is just one of the historical parts about how they tell Captain America stories, I guess. And I think it's hard to tell Captain America stories. Like Ed Brubaker had that great years-long run.
Clearly it's not. We had 5 years of great Captain America books.
Right. But like, you know, Remender took over, and what I thought were really great stories, they didn't sell well, and it kept going down, and like people don't respond to it the kind of way that he was doing it. So maybe, you know, this is one of those, like, it's like Superman. Like, it's really hard with a character who has that much symbolism and that much, it can mean so many different things depending on who you are and what you're coming from, that maybe it's hard to find a mass audience with. I don't know. The movies don't seem to have a problem, but
yeah, I don't think that's.
I'm just spitballing. Anyway, the Thor thing, I could care less about. They're gods, they're shape changers. Loki was a woman.
Well,
and a kid.
I don't care about that. The reason I think this is silly at its core is that Thor is his name. It's not a title like Captain America. And they're going out of their way to saying this is Thor, but. It's not like if I go to Paul's house to podcast, I become Paul.
When Beta Ray Bill had the hammer.
He was called Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I just think that's silly.
I don't know. We'll see how the story
and
goes.
And I'm not saying it's not going to be a good story. I'm looking forward to it. And the thing is, all these are temporary scenarios.
I think that's a difficult shoehorning thing because the truth of the matter is, if let's say it's Valkyrie, and I don't know that. Let's say it's like Valkyrie is the new Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say that because that's a possibility because she's blonde. It looks like it could be her, but I don't know that. It's not Angela either because we see Angela alongside.
Is it Mona?
Mona, Jonathan,
alongside Lady Thor in the picture in the all new Avengers picture. But the thing is, if they just did like a Valkyrie book, that's not going to end up on The View, you know, like that's not going to end up in mainstream news.
Well,
they need to
get
butts in seats.
It.
So that's why they're doing it.
I totally get it.
And so it's a weird semantic thing that they're calling her Thor.
It doesn't make eternal sense, though. You need to have at least internal logic, right?
Maybe there will be. We don't know.
It's just that's his name. His name is Thor Odinson. It's not like he's Captain Thor unless she's taking over the mantle of it.
I mean, the argument that is made is that, you know, when, you know, Odin says whoever is worthy to wield this hammer will possess the power of Thor. So it's like it definitely makes it difficult to, like, what do you call the previous guy? You know, they're referring to him as unworthy Thor, but like, what do you legitimately, like, if you're
right.
I gotta say, that's not a thing that bothers me about it,
right?
Because it's whatever, they'll either explain it or they don't, but until they don't,
I think it's weird. I think the concept itself, I think, is cool.
I think that the dumbest one is Iron Man, because why is it that they have taken Iron Man from a character that nobody in the world cares about to a character that everybody in the world knows, and then they continue to give him dumb suits after dumb suit? When they relaunched Marvel, they put him in that weird yellow and black suit and sent him into space. I'm like, what do you? Why?
Right.
You have something here.
And
it isn't like when Connor and I were growing up reading Iron Man comics, and he had all those weird suits at the end of the 80s. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
There was the silver and red one, and there was
a shoulder pad suit.
They were rad.
Yeah.
And these are crappy. And I don't know how to. I don't know what the difference is. But like, it's
they're
just,
overly mecha. But the
Whoa.
Yeah, that's been the case for a while.
Whoa.
I know, Paul.
It's not a four-letter word.
I know.
It's a five-letter word.
It's five.
This seems like it could be moving closer towards the Downey portrayal if he's going back to seducing the arrogant industrialist character. San Francisco is a really dirty city, though. I think white is a bad idea for a suit.
It's true.
But the other thing that's not mentioned here, and that sort of ties it all together, and I could be wrong on this because I stopped reading Original Sin, but I've been reading about it, is that I think it was revealed that Nick Fury has never been young. He's always been aging normally, and he's been all these Nick Furies that we've seen throughout the ages have actually been LMDs. And he's actually been living in space fighting aliens the whole time. And I just feel like you're taking all my favorite Marvel characters and you're running them into weird directions.
And I'm already because it's wacky as shit.
That one's okay, but I feel like I come to these books to read about Chris Hemsworth Thor and Steve Rogers, and I'm not getting those characters.
I understand the Captain America one literally, you know, Chris Evans is like, all right, I'm out of here. So
no, that's the other interesting thing is it's almost like they are preparing us all for different people in these suits.
Well, they're going to have to.
I may have heard things. I'm just saying it's almost like they're getting the audience ready of the idea of different people wearing these costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And side note, Medusa and Inferno being on this promo issue as Inhumans, we talked about it earlier, how in the issue of Ms. Marvel, being an Inhuman was portrayed very much like being a mutant, should tell you a lot too about where Marvel's going.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're seeing here, I think, especially in this promo where we saw Deathlok, who now looks like the character from the TV show and nothing like the character from the comics, is you're really starting to see the bleed over in how these characters are portrayed. We've been seeing it for years in the costumes, but now I think we're starting to see it in the portrayal.
Well,
my thing I'm not
necessarily against that. I think that's interesting.
I think change is exciting. I'm looking at shelves all around with all these books. I've got tons of stories. You know, with those characters that I like, not necessarily Steve Rogers, Captain America, because it's not really my bag. But the other cool thing is they're not killing off Steve again. He's still around. It's a different chapter in his life.
Like we said earlier, they'll all be back. It's not a big deal. I'm not really mad about it or anything. I just think it's a bummer for me because of talking about Marvel characters. Thor right now is my favorite Marvel character.
Yeah,
is my favorite Marvel character historically, and I'm not going to get to read about them. I mean, Thor is still going to be around, but you know, it's a bit of a bummer. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, though, I mean, like there's two sides of it, and I think sometimes the comic fan reaction is skewed towards one. There's like the emotional, and then the logical side. Like the emotional is, I want to read more, Steve Rogers stories or whatever. The logical side is, monetarily, this is obvious. I feel dumb saying it. It's a business, and where is all the money coming from? The money's all coming from the movies and the TV version. So if they're going to streamline everything to reflect that, to make their channels all match up, of course they're going to go in this direction. Like, of course they are. And so I can't really complain about it because that makes complete sense. I don't even necessarily want to complain about it. I think the stories could be really interesting. It's really interesting to watch. I don't want to act like a person who's super angry about it because I'm really not.
Mm-hmm. I'm not angry either. I just feel it's a bummer. I just feel like I've been really Thor the Mighty Avenger or not?
I like variety. I like the change. I like what's the sexiest invention of whatever century was invented? It's trail mix.
What?
You just want the checkerboard shaped pretzel. I want the other stuff. Even if I don't like them, I'll put them back. But I like the option. I like that there's different things going on, and so I get one version of Thor in the movies, and I get another thing in the comics. And there's a lot to play around with,
but that's not what you're going to get.
Pick and choose. And what
you're going to get the rice checks across the board. That's the point.
A lot has changed in trail mix technology. Over there's a different. You can find a trail mix.
This metaphor has gone off the
things,
trail.
Like the one that's got the M&Ms.
Trails where you have the M&Ms one is the best one. Although I suspect it's not as healthy as.
Well, there's different ones with M&Ms in it. But anyway,
I tell you right now, I'm looking forward to the Captain America stuff. I'm looking forward to it. I really want to read that. I like everything Rick's done with Captain America so far,
which is
suddenly become a controversial position, by the way. And Stuart Immonen is literally, there's nobody better in mainstream comics than Stuart Immonen. That's just a straight up truth. I'm really looking forward to Thor based solely on the fact that every single page that Jason Aaron has written, maybe ever, has been good, but especially so with his Thor comics.
Yes,
so,
no, I agree.
You know, whatever. He's created all these different versions of Thor already, and it's all been wonderful. They've been the best Marvel comics we've read for the past couple years. So, and I haven't been reading Iron Man anyway.
And you're going to read Iron Man. We're going to have a little experiment. We're all going to read it.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
Like, Iron Man hasn't been good for me for a long time.
Here's the fascinating thing with this, I think, with the reaction to it, is that there are going to be people that take solace in the fact that it's necessarily going to be a temporary thing. It's a temporary status quo.
Yeah, you wait around long
because
enough,
it's a corporate, like, it's corporate like characters that have been around for almost a century. They're going to bounce back to what we know them as. It's just, that's the thing. But then there are also readers, I think this is interesting, that are frustrated that they know it's only going to be temporary, that they wish that
those
there
are
could
people
be cool
that have yet
like
to
that.
Come to grips with what they're actually doing with their time. They're reading stories that will always essentially return to the status quo. And if you can't come to grips with that, then you're going to always be angry.
But I understand the frustration too, that you like it would be cool if they could do something really revolutionary and, you know,
yeah, but that's like not understanding what you're into. That's like
going
to a pizza place and getting mad you're not going to get Chinese food. Like it's not, that's just not what they do.
I think those people understand that it has to be that way, but it can still be frustrating that that's the reality.
Right, which what I mean is, which is where the not having come to the grips with the part yet. But you have to, you know what I mean?
I think they understand that that's how
it
works.
Well, just understanding and then accepting. I mean, you know, it's, you can understand it, but.
There's accepting and also just resigning yourself to.
Right, it's all the same thing.
Truth. Okay.
I tell you something, if more people bought comic books, none of this would be an issue because everybody can get what they want.
Right.
But more people don't, so you get which is the way they want it. And they get it. That's right. I cool hand looped that shit.
Okay, so you can head over to iFanboy.com, talk about this, all these things that are going on in Marvel right now, and I'm sure
I bet Thor can eat 50 eggs.
What, are you kidding me? Of course he can eat 50 eggs. Like, that's the dumbest thing you've ever said.
That's the greatest argument we've ever had. And then Josh, like an idiot, said, like George Kennedy, that Thor can eat 50 eggs. And we were all like, of course he eat 50 eggs. He's Thor, you idiot. And then we never did a show again.
Well, is he Thor? Is he? What is he now?
I think he's Thor. He's not going to be Lisa.
Maybe he will.
Maybe he will be Lisa and he will work at the Apple store that Tony goes to.
God.
And he'll be like at the Genius Bar. Because for a while he had the hammer stick and he would turn into Bjorn or
Donald Blake.
Who was the there was another guy who Sigurd Jarlson. and he was a different person.
Right.
So why couldn't he be Lisa?
There's no reason why.
And Sigurd Jarlson had – when I was 10, I thought that was the greatest mullet ponytail I'd ever – I was like, he looks so cool like that. I remember thinking, God, he looks cool. And then like recently I looked at those pages like, wow, that is the worst haircut that's ever –
It's young Josh wishing that he could turn his little rat tail
into a long Sigurd Jarlson ponytail.
Nordic.
God, it's so much fun to say Sigurd Jarlson.
Wow. All right. I am hot too. So we're going to wrap this show up. We went long, so we got to skip the audience questions.
Well, good totally for you. Totally cozy.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep it to 30 seconds to get you on the show when we don't run long. And a couple of quick announcements. A, you can look forward to the Guardians of the Galaxy show coming soon. The movie comes out in 2 weeks, I believe. And so there will be a show on that when that happens. And also, as you can tell from the number, this is episode 445. We're getting close to 450. 450, then 50 shows, and the round number shows are always our big all-email live shows. So get ready for that by sending in your questions to contact@ifanboy.com with the subject line 450. So we know we'll use that on the live show. That'll be coming up in 5 weeks.
So that's gonna be in August.
It's in August, yes.
It's going to be hot. It's going to be a sweltering live show.
It's going to be awesome. You're going to see us. We're all going to be glistening. We usually live stream it on the video, so you can see us all sweaty and awful. It's going to be great. So send those emails into contact@ifanboy.com. Meanwhile, head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show, this week's books, the Marvel news, whether or not you liked rat tail ponytails when you were a kid.
No comment.
If you were stuck in Maine and nothing else to do but look at the ponytails.
Listen, buddy. Just how it was. Fine.
Please send in fan art of Josh with a rat tail and Zubaz pants.
Yeah.
I never had Zubaz. I had
Gotcha. Care. What is that?
Okay. So you actually, you remember Gotcha stuff?
Or I remember the Gotcha movie with Anthony Edwards.
It was a Gotcha movie?
It's called Gotcha.
I don't know. I had like.
Yeah, it was in the 80s.
I had these great Gotcha pants that were like all print covered. And I remember in the eighth grade, I thought they were the greatest thing on earth. And it's the ugliest thing that anyone's ever worn. It was tapering.
It was an unfortunate time for clothing.
What's the bad shirt that when you get it wet, it changes color or something?
Hypercolor?
There you go.
Never had one of those. I remember at the time going, no, that's kind of dumb.
Well, you're going to in the fan art that's going to be coming in. Right, so
that's fine.
Whatever. Don't fail me, iFanverse.
I'm doing this next part, right? That's where I've completely lost track. Twitter.com/iFanboy and Facebook.com/iFanboy are where you can get updates for things. We occasionally retweet things. We post things of interest, and we always try to tell you what the pick of the week is before we do the show, so you'll have plenty of time to read it. And you can see what's going on there. Or you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, or at Fuzzy Typewriter on the Twitter.
If you find this kind of thing reprehensible, you should write about it and warn people.
You should. You really should.
iTunes. Yeah. You can write a review on iTunes, or better yet, you can tell all your friends about us. Introduce your mom to the podcast. Help spread that iFanboy love all around.
I'm seeing a lot of people this week taking their headphones out, just having a quizzical look on their face. Like,
what the fuck happened?
What's that?
Because we're not like new at this.
No, but... Well, if no comics come out...
It's true. This is what you get.
This is not a one-sitting iFanboy episode. This.
It's like, oof, oof. Can't all be winners.
We have to have a movie like on hold that Paul has watched that we can like we should have had...
What about Bob?
We should have had him like always have like Groundhog Day or something.
I saw that in theaters. And if
we... Use okay, then we have it to go to.
Okay,
right.
Just in case. So, just next watch Stripes, and then we'll just have that on deck.
Have that on Blu-ray somewhere.
All right. Until next time, I am Connor.
I'm P Money.
I'm Josh. I can't beat that. Surprise. But darling, stay
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.